Catherine Oral History Class. Today is Wednesday, October the 30th, 1985. I'm Rosemary Vitato, and I'm at the Maywood Farm in Bardstown, Kentucky. I'm talking with Danny Blinko today. He is the son of Cam and Christine Blinko, who own the farm that we're currently on. Danny is one of four children. He himself is married to Ann Blinko, and they have four children. Amy, 15, Beth, 14, and twin boys, Lance and Garrett, 10. Danny is a member of the Nelson County Cattle Association, the Mid-South and Southeast and International Brangus Association. As I said previously, Danny's father is Cam Blinko, and he is the owner of this farm, although Danny tells me that they have just incorporated this farm. Danny, could you tell me a little bit about why you incorporated this farm?
Well, most of the reason was the inheritance. He wanted to keep the farm together too. He felt like it set up. If one wanted to get out, the others had the option of buying it out. Instead of bringing in somebody else. So, yes. We felt like that was a little better way of keeping the farm together.
Okay. I said your mother's name was Christine Blinko. Would you give me her maiden name?
Albury.
Is she from the Nelson County area?
She's from Fredericksburg.
From Fredericksburg. Okay. Is your dad from this area too?
No, he's from Fredericksburg.
He's also from there. Okay. Was your mother and father both raised on a farm in Fredericksburg?
Well, my father wasn't. They ran a store there.
Okay.
My mother's raised on a farm.
Okay. What store was it in the burg that they...
It was the only general store in Burger at that time.
Okay. When did he get into the... Did his parents own the store and he helped out as a boy, or what was the...
No, it was his mother's.
Okay.
He helped out after his dad.
So how did he get from Nelson County, from Fredericksburg, which is in Washington County, to Bardstown here in Nelson County?
Well, he had bought a few farms, small farms, over here between here and the burg. So one or two farms, bought. So just gradually came this way and got this hall farm on Fire Shop Road. So. Years later, this other farm here on the Springfield Road, which adjoins the Hall Farm. So when he bought it, they bought another farm back as Hall Farm to make up that.
And that is this area right now. That's our... All right, how... We're calling this the Maywood Farm. How did it get that name?
Well, at one time, this is back before the Civil War, during it. There was a big plantation house down the road here about 4 miles. On the same order as the my old Kentucky home, the same side house. They built Cam's house and a garage and another house in town, just the outside brick, to give you some idea how big it was. But anyway, that was a maze. We had married the woods. All this farm, maybe it was back here at that long ago. At that time, it ran all the way to the river. So
the one farm ran from Bardstown all
the... No, from up here, Springfield Road.
Okay.
All the way back toward the river.
Is that right? How many acres would you say that
was? I don't know how many acres it was. At one time, it was huge.
Yes, sir. Your dad just thought that that would be a good name then, because this was part of
it
that.
It was already the name of the farm here, and that he had the farm registered with the University of Kentucky. So we got to have a name. So I decided to take that name. In fact, the original owner is buried in one of the fields back there, the cemetery.
So there's a cemetery here on this farm?
Yeah.
Do they, I mean, is it a, do you know where this, I mean, is it a plot at all?
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah, I know it
is.
It's right
over
the hill here.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, you mentioned that the University of Kentucky would like for all the farms to be registered. Is that what you're...
Well, I wouldn't say, I don't know that's the right word, or they want you to, but Cam has a plaque up there from the University of Kentucky, the farm registered, and it's the owner, how many acres it is, the name of the farm. This farm here is Maywood, the one across the road there is Pleasure View. Most of them have a farm.
Is there any significance behind that other than you just the idea of having it?
Well, we also have our holding brand on our cattle registered with the University with Kentucky. That way, no one else in the state could use our same brand on their cattle.
Okay. How many acres are on this farm?
About 475 acres. It was 500 acres exactly to Bluegrass Park.
How did that affect this farm?
Well, when they first drew it up, it was going to come right through here. It would split us in half. But as it's been told to me, that it was going to take Willis Distillery and about three other houses. So that's what that is. So they decided to put a curb in. So that's what they did. And so it didn't really affect us that much because it just took the corner. Still got some land on the other side of the road there, but it's not that much. If they kept it like exactly like it was, it would split it right after.
What did you have a choice in that matter?
They just came in here one day and told us that they were going to build a road through here.
And you didn't have any, I mean, if you wanted to protest against that, it wouldn't have?
No, I wouldn't have anything to do about it. They could do what they want.
Were they required to pay you anything for those
acreage that
you lost?
They took them to court, and of course I forget now how much we doubled the money what they offered. It was $200 an acre, and they took them to court, and I think it was $575 an acre.
Now, what year was that?
Well, it was 1965, I think.
So you're saying...
64. It's been there about 20 years.
So you're saying that land back then, an acre, was worth $200 an acre around in this area?
Yeah.
So what do you think it's worth now, an acre, approximately?
For farmland?
No, in this area, just
this
like
area?
On the Springfield Road area.
Oh, it's hard to say. That'd be hard to say. I don't know. They got this land too high at one time for farming. Sell it because when anybody bid on it. It's about a lot of money in the farm. You can't make it off the farm unless you make it somewhere else. It's not an asset to it.
Now, how long has your dad, how long has the farmhouse that's up? First of all, I guess I better get that clear. Your house that you've built here with Ann is behind the original farmhouse that was built in front of your house.
Yeah, it was built in 49.
Your mother and dad's house was built in 1949.
They lived over in Potter Shop. I think 7 or 8 years, 41 or 42. And they bought this farm here in 48, 47, somewhere like that. Somewhere along there, they built the house. They moved in 1952.
Okay, now did your dad go right into farming then? Is that what he did?
Well, he was farming back in 1941. He was farming about 275 acres or something, 250 acres farm. Just general farming. It was tobacco, a few hogs, and corn.
Okay, and then what did he get into?
Well, in 1952, he was raising mostly Angus cattle. In 1952, he was kind of disgusted with what he... results he was getting with his Angus cows, so he read about these brains. So he went out to Oklahoma and bought a 3/4 farmer bull to use on his Angus cows. That's when he got into the brains.
Okay, so a Brangus is...
He's a 3/8 Brahma and 5/8 Angus.
Okay, are there any other Brangus farms around this area?
Oh, in Kentucky?
No, in Nelson County?
Oh, no.
This is the only one? Okay. And you're saying, you know, what was the main reason then why that he decided to get into
it? His calves were kind of, they were small, didn't wean off very heavy, had a lot of trouble with pink eye. And he read about this new breed, it just started up. It was started up as an association in 1949. And I think his membership number is 452, I think. So there's only 400 members now. I think it got over a million members now.
What else did he do at that time? Can you tell me a little bit about...
You mean before or then?
No, or like with the Brangus. When he got into the Brangus, breeding them, what did that deal with?
Well, when he got into the Brangus, he really just wanted to better his cattle. And of course, it was a new breed, and he a lot of the associate members in the Brian Association wanted to show some cattle, and of course, he didn't have enough people to show cattle. So he started building his herd up bigger all the time. And he'd haul cattle out to Kansas City, Missouri, and show them and sell them, and haul them to Houston down to the Astrodome and show them and sell them. Started a lot of, I don't know how many breeders we've started, several.
Did he have any other kind of, was this his primary source of income then?
Well, in 1967, that's when he started, or 66, somewhere along there, 65, he started pretty heavily, starting in the brains, selling all our bulls and heifers as registered stock. Before then, it was mostly just regular beef cattle. But in the early 60s, when we started selling, keeping almost all the cattle and selling breeding stock, and built the herd up, eliminated. I think we quit growing wheat and increased our cow herd.
What do you have to feed? What kind of feed do you feed these?
Well, we feed them silage, hay, alfalfa hay, and corn.
Is that what you've always fed them? I mean, is it any different now than it was when you first got in, when he first got into it?
No, we feed them like we always have.
Okay, now, do you do any kind of milking or anything that with any other cattle?
Okay. We've never done anything.
Okay, and what about crops? Do you have any other crops?
Like
tobacco?
I said, all our income revolves around Brangus cattle, so everything we do on the farm here has something to do with Brangus cattle. So we raise 75 acres of corn, and all that corn goes back into our Brangus cattle.
Okay. Now, was she raised on a farm too?
Yeah.
So did she help out with this operation?
We just got finished
She does all that. And your mother is how?
72.
And your dad is how?
73.
Okay. And what is your birth date?
January 13, 1940.
Okay. Have you always helped out on the farm? And your brothers and sisters, have they all played a part in farming, you know, when you were growing up?
Well, yeah, I'd say when we were all growing up, we all helped on the farm here. But after my brother graduated, my two brothers graduated from college, they all, he started his own business selling machinery. These big lathes and presses type things, big manufacturers.
Okay, and your sister?
Well, she moved to, she's in Georgia now.
All right, does she live on a farm?
No.
She doesn't live. What, when did you decide that you wanted to be, to go into farming?
I guess back when, after I got married, I used to walk from there. 69, 16.
What did, had you done before that?
I was going to school. I was going to Bowling Green, Western Kentucky. And I was down there one semester. I transferred down there from St. Catharines. I was going there 2 years, transferred to Bowling Green. After about 6 months. I mean, after about 3 months down there, so I come on back farm.
Do you know what made you make that decision?
No, not really. No, I like farming. I get something.
Could you tell me, give me a rundown of a typical day? Just say, you know, what time you get up from the time you get up to the time you go to bed.
I don't know. I go to work about 8 o'clock. 30, depending on what I got to do that day, and daylight. I don't like it up when it's dark. I like this time change myself. But about 8 to 8:30, I usually start feeding about 8 to 8:30 calves, looking them over, you know, all the young stuff. And depends on what we're doing, either putting up hay or
how many cattle do you have right now?
Well, we try to keep them. I think we're down to about 130, maybe 125 mother cattle. We run about 140 most times. We'll probably be able to back up to 140.
Okay, now do you, is there one part of the year that's busier for you than another part?
I guess it's all busy. There's always something different. I mean, in the spring we're planting corn, set the back in the summer. Spring we got to have a lot of hay to put up. In the fall we're either picking corn or we got all these cattle to feed during the winter. So I don't know. I don't know if there's any real slack time. There's always a little slack time in between one and two things we're going to do.
So you do raise tobacco then?
Yeah. We got about 8,000 pounds of base here. Yeah, we raise it. We really just raise it because we have a base.
Okay.
I'm not a real big tobacco grower.
Okay, you say, you keep referring to we. Other than your mother and your dad and you, do you have any other outside help on this farm?
I got one guy.
Okay, and does he work full time?
Yeah, full time in that someplace.
Okay. What about your kids? Do they help out on the farm?
No.
You can't get. Do you think they will?
I don't know. They might help while they're going to high school, I guess. But I don't really think they're going to.
Does Ann, your wife, does she help out?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Does she? What does she do then?
Well, she has a part-time job. against that motion.
What changes do you see in the farm now as opposed to when you first started farming?
Changes. I don't know. It might take a while to think about that. I've seen a lot of changes in it. You know, during the early 70s, it seemed like everything was going pretty good. Now it didn't look too good as far as farming. So many people in debt. I don't see how they can get out of farming. It's about the only changes I see. Machinery, I guess you see less, you know, seems like more everything's going to machinery like instead of you don't use as much labor as you used to, or putting up hay and these round bales. You see, you got more silos, I guess we did back in the early 60s. Putting up more silos, it takes more labor, it's more, you gotta take more experience help as far as handling machinery. As far as changes in farming, I guess.
Okay, what are some of the problems that you have encountered over the years that have really stuck out in your mind?
As far as farming?
Mm-hmm.
You mean here on our place or farming in general?
No, here on your place. Some of the that have been rough, I guess, rough times or just problems that you've encountered?
I don't know. I can't think of any real problems. We used to have to, a long time ago, we used to have to haul most of our cattle and sell them in the south, southeast, down in Texas. Now we sell most of our cattle here at home on the farm. It's problems. It's changed.
Do you think the government has had anything to do with, you were talking about the changes and farming being where it is today, which is not very good. Who do you think is responsible for this?
Everyone, I think. Everyone from the guy that bought the land too high, to the federal land bank and the production credit, he told him, go ahead, you got to borrow all the money you want. The universities and everybody kept saying farming would continue on, farming would be good. Whoever said that the United States was the breadbasket of the world, I think that's a forest there. They grow soybeans in Brazil and Argentina as well as we can. China's exporting corn now, so we're still supplying more corn than any other nation is, but it's just a matter of time until they do start producing corn the way we do. To say that one person or one thing is involved, I don't know. It's everyone. The farmer paid too much for the land, and he got this land up to, around here, $1,000 an acre. And farm it and pay for it off that, it's impossible. Not the way things are now. I don't think they ever got that good.
What did you mention the university? What did the universities have to do with causing, you know, this?
Well,
problem?
Like I said, I think it's everything. I wouldn't say that they're a direct cause or anything like that. I think in the early 70s there was kind of a mystique to farming at one time. I can remember reading some farm magazines. It gave me the idea that the farmer, it brought a lot of people back to the farm, and they kept wanting to expand, you know, and borrowing more money. You just can't keep borrowing money and not pay it back someday.
Is that what appealed to you as far as the mystique of farming? Is that what intrigued you about wanting to get into farming?
No, not, no. If it hadn't been for my father owning the farm, I don't think I'd ever would have. I don't think I would have had to, enough nerve to borrow that kind of money to get into farming. Of course, when I was got into farming, I think land was selling around here for about on the average about $300 to $400 an acre, or maybe $450. I know there's a farm out on Boston Road, a big nice farm, it sold for $500 an acre, and everybody thought that was high then. So it was on the verge of hitting $500 an acre. Then after that, it shot on up to $1,000, $1,200 an acre in some places. It's just too high.
Do you think that the small-time farmer or a larger production of a farmer, which do you would you think would be the best situation to be in at this point?
I don't know. Everything you read says if you're not big, you're not gonna be able to survive. I don't know. I kind of disagree with it. I guess if you're big and you're paid off, you'd probably be all right. If you owed a lot of money, I don't know if you can or not. I still think the smaller farmers will continue on. Some things I really like the universities. I know some universities recommend the bigger you are, the better off you're going to be. I don't know if you got to borrow the money. I don't know if it is or not.
What are some of the improvements that you all have made on this farm over the years?
Oh, well, we try to make a few improvements every year. I don't know any great big improvements we've made. Put that silo in back in the early 60s. We got bigger equipment, more equipment. We've added a bigger bush hog to our equipment and bigger tractors. I don't know if I modernize some of our buildings, you know, keep them up. I don't know if any other real significant things we've done.
Knowing what you know today, would you have gone into farming?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Well, I know it would. Being that my father already had the farm here, someone had to help him with it. I would have. I wouldn't have gone out if I didn't have anything and borrowed money and to buy a place. I don't know. I just don't think I'd have enough nerve to borrow that much money to have a payment coming up like that all the time.
Would you encourage your twin boys to go into farming?
No, I'm not.
Why not?
Well, they've got a talent already. Well, they can draw about anything, and they got a vivid imagination. So I know out there, I think they're going to be another Steven Spielberg. What's his name?
Spielberg.
Yeah. So if they can do that, I recommend them doing that instead of farming.
Right. A little more interesting, anyway. So you think really that you'll stay here on the farm? This is where you'll retire.
I don't see we doing anything else but continue on. At least until while my parents are alive. After that, I don't know what happened after that. No telling. 10 or 20 years, you never know where Barstown would be. Barstown could be a subdivision right next door to me here, so it may put me out of farming.
What do you hope it'll be, though, say in 10 years from now?
Well, I hope farming will pick up. I don't know about how big Barstown's going to grow. I don't know. I don't like to see Barstown grow as big as it is. I always kind of like to look at it back like it was when we were in high school. But, some people want it to grow. I guess it'll grow.
Why don't you want it to grow?
I don't know. Personally, like a little town look to it. It's kind of losing it. That's just my opinion. Just look when you go in town and you look at it, what it was 20 years ago and what it is now. What do you think, what's it going to be like?
What kind of future do you think the farmer has today?
I have no idea what it's going to be like. It doesn't look good for the tobacco program they got in. Some people think they'd like to see them do away with it. Maybe it'd be good, maybe it wouldn't. I don't know. I know my dad said he can remember seeing them. People before they had this tobacco program go up there and give tobacco away. So, as much as it costs to get this tobacco out now, I'd hate to see it go down without possible. I do know that these tobacco companies are raising a lot of tobacco overseas, Venezuela, Mexico, and they can raise a whole lot of cheap.
Okay, we were talking about tobacco. Would you explain a little to me about what the support price it means and is on tobacco?
Well, okay. Well, what it is government would guarantee a certain price for your tobacco when it goes up there at the warehouse. They'll grade it. They have government graders who come in and say, well, this is worth so much money. Then if the tobacco companies don't buy it, the government will take it for that price, and they'll store it, and they'll resell it later to some other tobacco company or some other company later on. And that's what it is. Before that, they didn't have anything. We took it up there. If the buyers wanted to move to buy it, well, they didn't buy it. So, you know, bring nothing.
So you think this support
idea is a good idea? That's just my opinion. I've talked to two or three other farmers here that would like to see them do away with it, because right now you got a quota. Also with this government price support, you got a quota that the government, also with this guaranteed price support of the government, you're only allowed to grow so much tobacco. That way you can't flood the market with it. Like every farm will have so many pounds of tobacco that they'll be allowed to grow. It used to be acres. You're only allowed, like this farm here, I think he had 4 acres at one time, which is equal to about 8,000 pounds. And that way you couldn't keep getting bigger and bigger in them. There are some farmers here that think it would be better if they did away with it. Then they could grow, they feel like they could grow 30 acres a lot cheaper than they could grow 4 or 5 acres and make money. I don't think I could, because I had tired, took so much labor to get it done. But it takes me almost all day working with these cattle and everything. I don't think if they do away this price board, I think we'll quit growing. It's just my opinion.
I don't understand why, how the government can come in and tell you that they're going to do this or they're going to do that. Do you have a say-so in any
what
of these
mean,
programs, like on the support price, or just like on the, there was a time that, was it in the milking or whatever, that they ask you not to milk so many cow, produce so much milk?
Yeah.
Why do they do that?
Okay, because they get too much surplus. Right now, what happened in the tobacco program, they got too much surplus of tobacco, and they haven't sold it off. So that's cost them money. Same thing with this milk. They buy a lot of this milk to keep the price up. And they've got a surplus of milk products, cheese. That's the reason why they give so much of it away, is cheese and powdered milk. So they pay you, they try to get you an initiative to cut back because we're overproducing on the milk.
Do you think that's a good idea for them to?
There's pros and cons to it, I guess. I don't know. Some people favor it, I guess. Some people ain't. I don't know whether it is not. I don't know what much about it.
Danny, thank you for your time for this interview.